The 2025 inductees into the International Tennis Hall of Fame are three of the greatest names in the history of tennis. Hi there, I'm Patrick McEnroe, president of the Hall of Fame. Welcome back to the Tennis Worthy Podcast. We'll devote a separate edition to the doubles legends Bob and Mike Bryan. But today, we're focusing on a 2025 inductee who was always determined, and even as a teenager, was a fierce competitor, but who surprised many, including herself, by winning a career Grand Slam. She is Maria Sharapova.
I didn't count my Grand Slams. I didn't think of, well, now I have three and, you know, they've all been different and this is going to be the fourth and it would be a complete package. I didn't think like that until I had the complete package. I wanted to be the first one in line. I wanted to be the one that the coach said, okay, well, this is the drill we're doing. Hey, Maria, can you show the other kids what the drill is? I think it was this idea of leading. No matter what the scoreline was, I just kept thinking, next point, next serve, next return, take a deep breath. And I think that standard kind of set up for the rest of my career, because in sport, you can't get too far ahead of yourself.
Sharapova left her native Russia at the age of 7, traveling with her father across the world to Florida, where they showed up at Nick Bollettieri's famed tennis academy. Nick could see she was good, but how good was only to become apparent over the following 18 years. Our Chris Bowers looks at the four Grand Slam victories and the personality behind them that made Maria Sharapova into a tennis legend.
There's a movie just waiting to be made about Maria Sharapova. Not just her tennis career, laced with a nose for glamour, supreme professionalism and a very astute business brain, but how she got onto the treadmill that allowed her to reach the very top. Born in Siberia, she first picked up a racket at 4 when her dad, Yuri, played club tennis, and she loved the rhythm of hitting against the practice wall. Yuri noticed what impressive contact she was making with the ball and agreed to pay for a few lessons. As Sharapova tells the story of her early motivation, it's clear that the characteristics of the champion were all there.
I remember my first passion for the sport was about being first in line when I was in a group with 5 other kids. I wanted to be the first one in line. I wanted to be the one that the coach said, okay, well, this is the drill we're doing. Hey, Maria, can you show the other kids what the drill is? I think it was this idea of leading, of trying something that was unfamiliar, but getting familiar with it and then honing it in and, you know, finding a way to be a master of it. I had a deep passion for the competitiveness of the sport, and I loved seeing improvements. I loved seeing, you know, if something wasn't working for a week, spending a little time with my coach or my trainer and working through the kinks and then seeing results. It's a bit of a return of investment in some ways, where you work so hard to try to figure this little puzzle out, and when it all comes together and you see that your effort and the time that you spent focusing on this task comes into life. I think I was inspired by the idea of growth within the sport. I was an only child and still am, and so I was very close to both of my parents, and my father had more of the athletic role, where he was so focused on finding the right coaches and the right trainers to make me a better player and just to keep improving day by day, not even month by month. It was, you look at it like you add a few great things and perhaps that will get you a victory or a big trophy. And my mom was, you know, more soft-spoken, and she added an element of education and culture that tennis didn't provide at that time, because it was so physical and it was so just focus-oriented on this racket and ball. And so being in her presence, I think, opened up my eyes to other things in life, like taking care of yourself and your body. And I was this young girl playing in a very physical and demanding sport. And so she would just, I guess, expose me to other things in life and made sure that I stuck to my homework, that I read the right books, you know, that I found interest outside of the sport. So I think their combination really helped shape who I was as a player, but also as a person.
Sharapova's family were somewhat itinerant. Originally from West Russia, Yuri and his wife Yelena had left their home near the Chernobyl nuclear power station following the radioactive disaster there in 1986. So Maria was born out east in Nyagan. But when she was three, the family moved to Sochi on the Black Sea. There, Yuri befriended Alexander Kafelnikov, whose son Yevgeny was a promising Russian junior. Maria made such good progress that she was invited to a tennis clinic in Moscow with Martina Navratilova. She recommended to Yuri that he take Maria to Nick Bollettieri's tennis academy in Bradenton, Florida. But Yuri had very little money. So he borrowed enough to get him and Maria to America, with Maria's mother Yelena only joining them 2 years later. Interviewed in 2014 when he became a Hall of Famer, Bollettieri also recognized the champion's mentality in the tall young Russian.
If her opponent got hurt, if she had to take an extra step, she wouldn't do it. She'd step right over. That Sharapova competes unbelievable. She's more dangerous when she's behind. She knows one style of play. Serve, short ball, hit it. Flat as a pancake. And she's tough to beat competitively. She's one of the strongest minds in the history of the ladies' game.
Many people can claim to have heard Sharapova before they saw her. When she started playing full tour events, she'd not so much a grunt in the manner of another Bollettieri graduate, Monica Seles, but a two-syllable shriek. It certainly drew attention to her, but that was soon overridden by some highly impressive results. It's easy to forget that the Wimbledon she won in 2004 was only her seventh major. She'd won her first match at a slam at Wimbledon a year earlier, when she went on to reach the fourth round, losing to her fellow Russian Svetlana Kuznetsova 7-5 final set. And when Sharapova looks back on her Wimbledon triumph of 2004, that loss to Kuznetsova played a massive role.
The year before, I made it to the fourth round at Wimbledon, which was a really big deal for me. I remember losing in three sets. I had a chance to be a quarterfinalist at Wimbledon. I remember taking it really hard because I was like, this is the biggest stage of my life. And a year later, I found myself on center court in the final playing against Serena Williams. And I couldn't help but think back to that quarterfinal, to that fourth round just a year before, because there was something about losing that match that really fueled me. I was so close and one of the most important tournaments in the world. And I thought about it a lot. You know, I love playing on grass. I loved every aspect of the tournament. I loved the tradition. I loved wearing white. Especially loved the strawberries and the occasional cream when I was allowed. There's so many just special traditions of that event that just make you want to win it. And every time I stepped on that court, I'd feel a little extra pressure, to be honest. No matter what round it was, you knew that there was a little bit more on the line when you played Wimbledon, even as a junior. And so to get to that stage of the finals, because I'd never been in that position before, I didn't have any experience to rely on. I could only help make new memories. You know, I helped shape my own memory in that moment. And I woke up that morning not feeling very well. I was under the weather. I remember calling my mom, who wasn't there with me. I think she was a little superstitious. She didn't want to come down for the final. And just saying, wow, I'm in this, you know, such a big moment of my career and I'm not feeling great. And it was kind of like making an excuse for myself. And I remember getting to the courts that morning after not having that great breakfast and, you know, had a tough chat with my dad. He's like, you're at the biggest stage of your life. You know, you got to put everything aside. Got to the court and I had a very similar conversation with my coach. And he's like, well, now you put on horse blinders because everyone's going to want a piece of you. You know, no matter how today goes, just focus on the next 2 or 3 hours of that match. And I went onto that court like as if I've been there for so long and almost surprised myself by the level, by the toughness, by how it was almost like I didn't care where I was, even though I deeply, deeply cared. But I could have been on any other court in the world. And I was very competitive. I was very driven. I was playing one of the biggest competitors and champions of all time. And I just had an ability to dial it back and to not make it so grand. And I think that's what helped shape that victory.
As Sharapova and Williams walked out onto the center court for the final, Williams was the red-hot favorite. She was 22, world number one, and had six major titles, including the previous two Wimbledons. Sharapova was in her first final. And yet, after half an hour, Sharapova had taken the first set 6-1, showing no fear, even after making a couple of unforced errors. Serena forced her way back into the match in the second set, opening up a 4-2 lead, but Sharapova was prepared.
I remember thinking that I can't think too far ahead. No matter if I'm up in the match, no matter if I'm down, no matter what the scoreline was, I just kept thinking, next point, next serve, next return, take a deep breath. And I think that standard kind of set up for the rest of my career, because in sport, you can't get too far ahead of yourself. There's so many momentum changes. I think you see it and feel it as a player a lot more than a spectator. And so much can change so quickly in a very short period of time. And I recognized it in that match because I knew I was playing against a former champion that was incredibly resilient. And that if I took my, you know, my head off the ball, then I was going to get, I was going to lose that one. So yeah, it just taught me to stay in it, to hang in there. But it was also a big moment because as a defending champion, she was facing someone that's never been in that position before. So there was, you know, and I was very young and very resilient and fearless. And I think that played to my advantage.
That resilience and fearlessness saw Sharapova take the last four games to win 6-1, 6-4 and post one of the biggest upsets of the tennis year. As a Williams forehand went into the net, Sharapova sank to her knees and then raced into the crowd to embrace her father, Yuri. 10 years after they'd made a highly speculative trip to Florida with borrowed money to see if Maria could make it on the tour, her name was on the Wimbledon Roll of Honour. Despite that highly impressive coming-out party, Sharapova had to wait more than 2 years for her second major. She'd played consistently in the interim, and with women's tennis having a period with no single dominant player, Sharapova had two stints as world number one in 2005, becoming the first Russian woman to reach the summit. But as many players have found over the years, conquering New York is as much a cultural challenge as a tennis challenge.
The US Open was always a difficult one for me to win because of the energy. I grew up in very like quiet surroundings, and even for the years that I was training, I wasn't around many people, just, you know, whoever I would train with, my coaches, my trainers, the girls and boys that I competed against. And, you know, I didn't travel much. I didn't see so much of the world. I mean, it was very limited. And when I'd come to New York City, the overwhelming noise, the overwhelming energy, it was very unfamiliar territory. And I wasn't sure how I felt about it. I knew that I felt better in a quiet environment because that's all I knew. But if I wanted to be a champion in New York, I had to embrace that energy. And I had to embrace the ups and downs and the emotions of a New York crowd. They want entertainment, and they're going to get entertainment whether you like it or not, and they will be part of that roller coaster journey. And so I'm so glad that I went there as a junior and that I played a few tournaments, and it kind of like just it made me feel more aware of and just grew my confidence in playing in front of a New York crowd. I felt like I was ready for another big win. I went into that US Open feeling good about my game. I had a great practice week. I don't want to say I was like in a flow state, but I felt confident enough to say that no matter who was across the net since my first major, I have the experience. But now I feel like I'm also physically stronger. I can withstand a longer match. But I had to grow into that. I had to grow and work off the court and really get stronger. And the stronger you get physically, the stronger you are mentally. And so I felt like those 2 years really helped shape that path toward the US Open victory. And my game was there with every match. I felt smoother. I felt looser. I felt like I was in my own body. I wasn't thinking about the noise. I wasn't thinking about anyone I was playing. I was really focused on myself.
That certainly showed in her first four rounds when she didn't drop a set and conceded just 15 games. She needed two tiebreaks to beat Tatiana Golova in the quarters and then was taken to three sets by the Wimbledon champion Amélie Mauresmo. That set up a final against Justine Henin, who Sharapova had beaten twice that year, but who was in her fourth major final of 2006.
I think of Justine Henin being one of the toughest competitors that I faced in my career. Her game was spectacular. It was smooth. It felt like you were going to be out there for over 3 hours long, which just thinking about it is exhausting. And she was a very smart player. She thought ahead. She knew. She constructed the point so well. You know, she brought me forward where I wasn't as comfortable. She had a deadly slice. But that US Open final, I felt like the first few games really determined the trajectory of those two sets, because it was kind of like up and back. You know, she had me in the first few games. I felt like physically the momentum was on her side, but I just stayed with it. I think it was an example of staying with an opponent and showing her that I'm going to be here no matter what. It can be your best day, it can be my worst, but I will show up and I will stand in and I will, at least physically, emotionally, I will be there till the very last point. And I think in the beginning, I think she started feeling that. And then I got a little looser and I wasn't as nervous. And when you're not as nervous in a, you know, a New York City final, you're going to do well.
Sharapova won 6-4, 6-4 to claim her second major title and her third victory over Henin that year. The pair finished 2006 at 1-2 in the rankings in a very competitive year in women's tennis. Sharapova's third major, the 2008 Australian Open, played for the first time on the less rubbery blue courts, came at arguably the pinnacle of her playing powers. She didn't drop a set all tournament, she didn't have a seven in any scoreline until the final, and she seemed in a class of her own. Not that her draw promised an easy ride, but just as with Wimbledon in 2004, it was a recent defeat that was still rankling that motivated Sharapova to find her best tennis when she needed it.
I remember playing so well throughout the entire 2 weeks, all seven matches. I felt so confident, so comfortable in myself and the decisions that I was making on the court. Things felt smooth. And in tennis, smooth is not a word that's used very often. But over the course of those 2 weeks, I felt like I was getting better and better with each match. I felt really strong. No matter who I played, no matter what their style was, I had answers. And I played the quarterfinal against Justine Henin, who was, you know, one of the toughest competitors to play against. And I had just lost to her a few months before that in Madrid in a three-hour match. Had so many opportunities to win it. I was very disappointed. I took that loss really hard. But I kind of used that fuel in the off season to really set the stage for the Australian Open in 08. And I went into that event, the draw came out, and I saw Lindsay Davenport second round, Justine Henin quarterfinal. And I was like, well, strap in and enjoy the ride. And going into that match against Lindsay, I was like, that's a tough player to face in the second round. She was unseeded. I think she's faced a few injuries, so she came into that event unseeded. And when I got past that match in two straight sets, I felt like facing Justine, I had this sense of confidence and belief that if I could beat Lindsay in the second round and do it, you know, in full control, that I had a great chance against Justine. And I really played that well. I stayed with her the entire match. You know, I didn't let up. And sometimes when you're a little too confident in a match, that can be a bad thing because momentum changes so quickly. And I knew that she was going to be with me till the very last point. And I just didn't let up.
Just didn't let up is an understatement. Sharapova beat Henin 6-4, 6-love to take her into a semi-final against Yelena Yankovic, having lost just 20 games in five matches. Yankovic won only four in their semi, leaving Sharapova to face the other top-level Serbian woman, Ana Ivanovic, in the final. Ivanovic had always done well in Melbourne and started the better of the two, but it was a high-profile stage, and Sharapova was able to use her reading of the game to seize her opportunity when it presented itself.
Ultimately, no matter who you face in the final, you know that it's going to be a really tough day at the office. You expect going into a match that it's going to be a tough day, and she was up a break. She was playing really well, and I remember there was, speaking of momentum, I remember we had this long point and she went for a drop shot unexpectedly. She doesn't hit too many drop shots, and I thought, she's feeling this moment. And ever since that point, I just felt like the match was in my hands. And that's tennis for you. As a player that's there, seeing your opponent and their reaction and the choice of shot that they make in certain positions and matches, you're like, I felt it. I felt like that something changed in that game and on that point that would allow me to win this match.
Sharapova won 7-5, 6-4 to claim her third major. And by May, she was back at the top of the world rankings after Hénin's sudden and unexpected decision to retire while at the very peak of the game. Three majors won and three different ones. But surely Maria Sharapova wouldn't complete her set. After all, Roland Garros, the missing one, was on clay, and she'd once described herself as like a cow on ice when playing on a clay court. But did she really say that?
I did say that I was a cow on ice on clay because it was just very honest feedback. It's how I felt. I wasn't the quickest mover. I didn't slide very well. I didn't recover well. I wasn't my best in a 3.5-hour match. And I knew that all those elements were part of being great on clay. And so if I wanted to be one of the greats on clay, I had to change my mentality. I had to, you know, train differently. I had to be more specific about my training. And those were definitely the components that I improved. And they were intentional. You know, I think when something comes more difficult to you in life than other things, you really have to make, you know, an intention of improving them, right? You have to, you know, concentrate a little bit more. You have to make technique changes. You know, perhaps it's someone new on the team that can help shape a different idea or theory. My clay journey was interesting because I felt like with each year I was improving, but I was still far from my best. When I reached Roland Garros in 2012, I had won a couple of warm-up events. And one of the things I changed in the lead-up to Roland Garros for a few years prior to that was I started playing an additional tournament. And I think, you know, when you're training in California, you don't want to go to Europe too soon because the season's so long. So I always just wanted to play one or two clay tournaments before Roland Garros. And several years before that, I made a commitment of, this time I'm going to get there early. I'm going to play in Stuttgart. And even though it was an indoor tournament, I played 4 or 5 matches and I didn't start the tournament very well, but I just improved. And I look back to that week because I think it really helped shape the trajectory of those next 4 to 5 weeks. And I came to Roland Garros that year just very confident, feeling like I have a lot of matches behind me. And I wasn't a player that relied on a lot of matches prior to a Grand Slam. Like if I had a good practice week, I was okay. I'd work my way through the tournament. But that year, I think having those wins, and it was like 10 or 12 matches where, you know, whether they were 3 sets or easy matches, I felt my body adjust well to the clay. And that was the first time where I thought, I have a real chance of winning this thing.
Maria is somewhat underplaying her form in the lead-up to Roland Garros 2012. She lost just one match in 4 clay court tournaments. She may have started slowly in Stuttgart, but she won it. She lost to Serena Williams in the quarterfinals of Madrid. She won Rome. And by the time she walked out onto the Philippe Chatrier court to face Sara Errani in the Roland Garros final, she'd won 18 of the 19 matches she'd played on the red dirt that year. As an Italian, Errani had grown up on clay, and it was clearly her best surface. But by that stage, the surface no longer mattered.
I was just on a mission that day. I was on a mission to win. It didn't matter if it was Errani or another opponent. I had the opportunity to be a champion at Roland Garros and to complete a career Grand Slam, and that was that was one of the greatest challenges of my career, and I did it on that day. I don't think I recognized how special it was to win all four until a couple days later. I know it probably sounds like crazy, but it's not something you think about on a daily basis. When you're at each and every major, you are there, you know, fighting for a chance to be victorious there, whether you've won it before or not. And I didn't count my Grand Slams. I didn't think of, well, now I have three and, you know, they've all been different and this is going to be the fourth and it would be a complete package. I didn't think like that until I had the complete package. And so I felt like I had a little bit of bragging rights. And it really wasn't until like others said to me, like, wow, you've won every major on each surface. I think it was the idea of winning that big one on all different surfaces, and also knowing how difficult winning Roland Garros was going to be for me. And it wasn't just my opinion. I think many people thought the same way. So to feel like so many of my fans and journalists that have watched me grow up and have witnessed kind of this transformation as an athlete on the clay courts, just, no, I felt really proud in that moment. I felt like I overcame something that was a big difficulty and a big challenge, and I proved that I could find a way.
Not only did she find a way, but she found it twice. 2 years later, Sharapova won a second French title, so the player, who was like a cow on ice when she was on a clay court, ended up with five majors, one on each surface, but two on the dreaded clay. That was her reward for not just hard work, but dedicated and focused practice, with the aim of making her into a clay courter constantly in mind. And in that, she's an example to anyone in any walk of life who needs to go outside their comfort zone and master a new skill. The end of Sharapova's career was a bit messy. She'd had two shoulder operations, one in 2007 and a more serious one in 2008, and they left a legacy of constant secondary injuries. She inadvertently continued using a medical product after it had been included on the banned substances list and was suspended from playing. She owned up to the error and her ban was reduced, but she still had to sit out 15 months. After her return, she picked up her 36th tour-level title, but kept being hindered by minor injuries and finally retired after the 2020 Australian Open. In 2022, she became a mother, having settled down with her partner, a British businessman. And it's clear this home-loving woman, whose own childhood was uprooted to give her the chance to chase her tennis dreams, is now making up for lost time.
A lot of my focus today is around my family and my son. I have a little boy, and it's been just so special to watch him grow. As someone who's very close to her parents, I recognize the importance of having a daily support and guidance, and, you know, to feel a responsibility that you're helping shape their future and everything, right? And their knowledge and their experiences, opening their eyes to a world that they've never seen before is really special. So, you know, whereas prior to that, it was always about being driven as an athlete. And right now it's being there for my son. But with that comes, I mean, a big time commitment. And so I think one of the things that as any mom does is try to find the right balance between working and traveling and being with your son and those life responsibilities.
All of which means the next chapter of the Maria Sharapova story is likely to be away from tennis. But with her reading of the game and magnetism as a specialist in the art of winning, it's hard to see her being out of the sport for too long. She'd make a great mentor to a rising young player. But is her outstanding match temperament something you can teach? Maybe it's simply innate to her, the greatest attribute of Maria Sharapova.
That was Chris Bowers charting the life and successes of Maria Sharapova, who we can now call a Hall of Famer. And isn't it fascinating to listen to Sharapova talking there about her tennis, her childhood, and her life? It's almost as if, after two decades of intense champions focus, she is finally allowing herself to smell the roses and present that warm human side that so many tennis players seems to feel they have to keep hidden during their playing days. There's more from the Tennis Worthy podcast around the 2025 inductions, notably a parallel podcast with the Bryan twins. The Tennis Worthy podcast is brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Patrick McEnroe. Don't go too far, as there's plenty more great content coming from where this podcast came from.